The beginning verses of Numbers 10 describe two silver trumpets and their primary purposes. One was to summon the congregation, and the other was to set out on their journey. The silver trumpet is used to make people alert and get their attention. It is also used to sound the alarm of battle. It is the high priest or his representatives who are to blow these silver trumpets. This job cannot be performed by a person who is not of the priestly line. So Richard, in this discussion, will describe what it's like at the end time as well, when our representative of our high priest Yeshua, or Jesus, will blow the final trumpet blast to summon his people to resurrection and war against evil.
We are going to be going through Numbers, of course. Now we're in the 10th chapter of Numbers, and we will do a little bit of background to catch up where we're at, because sometimes I forget what it was all about.
Numbers chapter 10. The Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, "Make two silver trumpets. Of hammered work you shall make them, and you shall use them for summoning the congregation and for breaking camp. And when they are blown, all the congregation shall gather themselves to you at the entrance of the tent of meeting. But if they blow only one, then the chiefs, the heads of the tribes of Israel, shall gather themselves to you. When you blow an alarm, the camps that are on the east side shall set out. And when you blow an alarm the second time, the camps that are on the south side shall set out. An alarm is to be blown whenever they are to set out. But when the assembly is to be gathered together, you shall blow a long blast, but you shall not sound an alarm. And the sons of Aharon, the priests, shall blow the trumpets. The trumpet shall be to you for a perpetual statute throughout your generations. And when you go to war in your land against the adversary who oppresses you, then you shall sound alarm with the trumpets, that you may be remembered before the Lord your God, and you shall be saved from your enemies. On the day of your gladness also, and at your appointed feasts, and at the beginning of your months, you shall blow the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings. These shall be a reminder of you before your God. I am the Lord your God. In the second year, in the second month, on the 20th day of the month, the cloud lifted from over the tabernacle of the testimony, and the people of Israel set out by stages from the wilderness of Sinai. And the clouds settled down in the wilderness of Paran. They set out for the first time at the command of the Lord by Moshe. The standard of the camp of the people of Yehuda set out first by their companies, and over their company was Nashon, the son of Aminadab. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Issachar was Nathaniel, the son of Zuar. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Zebulun was Eliab, the son of Helon. And when the tabernacle was taken down, the sons of Gershon and the sons of Merari, who carried the tabernacle, set out. And the standard of the camp of Reuben set out by their companies, and over their company was Eleazar, the son of Shedur. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Shimon was Shemuel, the son of Zerushaddai. And over the company of the tribe of the people of God was Elisaph, the son of Duel. When the Kohathites set out, carrying the holy things, and the tabernacle set up before their arrival, the standard of the camp of the people of Ephraim set out by their companies, and over their company was Elishama, the son of Amihud. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Manasseh was Gamaliel, the son of Pedahurzer. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Benjamin was Abidan, the son of Gideoni. The standard of the camp of the people of Dan, acting as rear guard for all the camps set out by their companies. And over their company was Ahizer, the son of Amishadai. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Asher was Pagiel, the son of Okran. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Naphtali was Ahira, the son of Anan. This was the order of march of the people of Israel by their companies when they set out. And Moshe said to Hobab, the son of Reuel, the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law, "We are setting out for the place of which the Lord said, 'I will give it to you.' Come with us, and we will do good to you, for the Lord has promised good to Israel." But he said to him, "I will not go. I will depart to my own land and to my kindred." And he said, "Please do not leave us, for you know where we should camp in the wilderness, and you will serve as eyes for us. And if you go with us, whatever good the Lord will do to us, the same will we do to you." So they set out from the mount of the Lord 3 days' journey. And the ark of the covenant of the Lord went before them 3 days' journey to seek out a resting place for them. And the cloud of the Lord was over them by day, whenever they set out from the camp. And whenever the ark set out, Moshe said, "Arise, O Lord, and let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you." And when it rested, he said, "Return, O Lord, to the 10,000s of Israel."
All right. Any thoughts out there? Any comments out there? Any point of view out there? Here we go.
It's something at the end there, how Moses was entreating his brother-in-law. It sounded like, you know, and he asked him 2 times, but it doesn't indicate, did he actually leave them or did he?
Yes, he did go with them.
Oh, he went with them.
He went with them, yes.
Oh, that was good.
We'll talk about that.
Question. The silver trumpets, were they actually pounded out of silver and just silver?
Yes.
Or were they shofars with silver wrapped around them?
No, they were not shofars. They're actually silver trumpets.
So, okay.
And there's only 2 of them for a very specific reason. They are not the shofar as we think of the shofar, because that's not what the word is in Hebrew. The word is not shofar at all. It is, has to do with the word, has associated with the word trumpet. What we would think in the term of a trumpet, but doesn't have, you know, different sounds by pushing the buttons. It's how it comes out of the high priest when he does his blowing or commands others to do the blowing. They must blow it in a certain way or manner. And he read one of them here was one with a loud sound. Now, that's very interesting because it's the 3rd one listed. Yes.
The trumpets, I had done some study and I want you to expound on it. The trumpet one time I heard was the airways, like maybe could be satellite and television. And then it said, when you hear your enemies come in the land, that we're to sound that trumpet right away. My spirit was thinking, now is the time that, you know, the people say something. And I just thought about the trumpet. Like one time I did an extensive study on the trumpet was like the airways of the television, you know, or radio waves. So it just made me think of that.
I understand what you're saying. Yes. Comment on that. Right. Sorry, what?
Richard has 2 set of those trumpets, right? The long silver trumpets.
Oh, yeah, just a prototype of it. I don't have the actual ones. That actually, these are actually made of, and they're coated with silver. That's all it is. I mean, it's the outside. It's not what you think. They're not valuable things. They were just coated with it on the outside, so it kind of like looks like silver. You know, it's like things can look like gold, but not really gold. It's a sound. But this is a subject matter about the sound. All right. Any more questions?
There is a sound that you made during a particular feast, right?
Well, we'll talk about that. It's more than just a particular feast, because it has to do with what's called solemn one. And that solemn one has to do with also Yom Kippurim. Every time the Bible uses the term solid feast or solid day, we'll talk about that one right there of Yom Kippurim. Next question?
Yeah, if everyone that has a silver trumpet and has this idea in mind that the Lord, you know, as he says here, if you blow it, the Lord will remember you. And you'll be safe from your enemies. Do you know? Okay.
Not everyone. There's only 2 of them. And they're in the possession of the high priest and nobody else. Okay, so it's not just anyone that blows it. Has to do that when the house or the house of, I'll put it this way, the house of Jacob is in trouble, then it's blown. Because the house has not been separated yet here in the book of Numbers.
This might just be a little contentious, but the high priest has two trumpets, so...
Yes, they control two... No.
Sorry. I had to throw that out there.
That's a good question. That's a really good question. But it says, and his sons. Okay, so we're talking about more than likely his sons would have done it, but the high priest gives the order. All right? Just as much as our high priest gives the order. But he himself does not blow it. Now, the question, the statement that came up is that when the trumpets are to sound, Yeshua talked about the sound of the trumpet, remember? And see if I can't find it, need some really help here real quick about the blowing of the last trumpet or something. No, not last trumpet, but he said it, I think it's in Matthew, that had to do with blowing of the trumpet. I'm not quite sure right away where that's at. Had to do Matthew 24, was it? Okay, I'm in the wrong chapter. That's why I couldn't find it. that's useful. Thank you for your pay attention to what's going on when I don't know where I'm at. All right, what verse were we at now? 31. Okay, 24, verse 31. Yeah, this is very important. And he will send his angels with a great sound. Remember, sound of a trumpet. And they will gather together. Pay attention as we go through the 10th chapter of Numbers. They will gather together his elect from the four winds or from the four areas in the air, and from one end of heaven to the other. Now, we talk about winds. The winds are in the heaven, right? But he also says from one end of heaven to the other end of heaven. So it means all the way around the world. So the first thing it's being called is from the four winds, and then around. Pay attention, because it's very interesting here in the 10th chapter of Numbers. Yes. Another question? Oh. So, to say to you, the radio's not going to be the answer, because that's not going to be heard around the world. It's not going to be heard in the four corners, and it's not going to be heard around the world. Radio can be blocked out so fast and so quick by the power of God that no electrical current will ever move without his say-so. If we depend upon man's ability to create and to make computers, to make trumpets, to make sounds and television and internet and all these telephone numbers you get, don't answer the question, but just think about this. How effective is your telephone? Is it working any place, anywhere, anytime you want it to work? There's always restrictions on it. Now, when these two trumpets, when the trumpet be blown here, which the Lord has talked about, is going to be heard, and I want to be really upfront with you. When we go to book the 10th chapter, be careful when you look at this and pay attention to Matthew 24, verse 31. You'll understand what I'm saying here in a minute. 24th chapter, verse 31. However you translate it, or what translation you have. Because the trumpet is a really important thing. And the silver trumpets, there's just two of them. Why aren't there three of them? Why aren't there 10,000? Why aren't there 12? How come there's just only two? As in the hands and ownership of whom? The high priest. Not the people, not Moses, not the king, but the high priest and the high priest only. And I've told you this before, and I know it's not hard sometimes for people to think about this, but when we look at what's called the Aaronic priesthood, It is a shadow. It is a type of the mace of Melchizedek priesthood. The Melchizedek priesthood is from above. So down below, the Aaronic priesthood is a picture of the one that's above. Because otherwise it's foolishness on God's part to build the tabernacle and told him, Moses, to build it exactly as you see and precisely place them in where they are to be put. For it is up from above. So there is a, quote, holy place, end of quote, in heaven. And that holy of holies is the throne of the living God. It is a picture. So we look at this thing, we have to know that all that stuff that they made physically, and all that stuff that's physical, that Moses was told to do physically, and the people of Israel did physically, to make the physical representation of what's above. Because we have here, I'll just button in here for just a minute, when Nicodemus came and asked a question, he didn't understand what the Messiah was saying. Now, he was not a dumb, idiotic, foolish man. He was a Sanhedrin, very intelligent man, knew scriptures, knew understanding. He just didn't get the picture about one thing. And he asked a question, which we think is, boy, you were sure dumb not knowing. No, he asked a very down-to-earth question. And we think, oh, man, that man didn't understand anything about God. If I was there, if I was Nicodemus, I'd ask the same question. I don't know. Until the Son of God tells me, then I have understanding. And he called Nicodemus a teacher. He didn't call Nicodemus a lawyer. He didn't call Nicodemus a scribe. He called Nicodemus a teacher. Because that's what Nicodemus was. Yes.
When you were asking us why did God choose two, what flashed in my mind was the northern and the southern tribe.
You go northern, southern tribe. I'm sorry, what? Somebody say something. I missed. Okay. So we're going to look at these two silver trumpets. Now in Hebrew, that trumpet has, okay, what it's called? Chatzorot. Chatzorot. Yes, so it has no word associated with the shofar. And it's silver. The shofar comes from an animal's horn. Whether it's a goat or an antelope or whatever it is made out of. My wife's got another one over here. It's solid black and it's long and it's straight. I don't know what animal it comes from. Doesn't make any difference. But it makes a sound out of that horn. All right. So when we think about horns, we think it has to do with something of a message. Well, yes. And then there is, what is the message about? Never mind. I'm not going to go there from that. I'm wandering off. I'm sorry. And he says, now they made of one solid piece and you will use them for two main reasons. Did you get that in verse 2? For two main reasons. Now within these main reasons are other things taking place. So the two trumpets, one is to blown for one reason and the other is to be blown for another reason. And now we have to say, what is the purpose of the trumpet? Yes.
The first one is for the leaders. And the second one is for the congregation.
For the journey. Pay attention, this book is about the journey. Where were they journeying to? Where?
Canaan.
Land of Canaan. That was their job. They were on the ready to travel in. Now we learn from the first book, chapter of Numbers, God named certain individual people. God named them, God appointed them by a certain name they have to tell us what? I am the what? Commander-in-chief, let's put it that way. He is the overall one who is going to take charge and responsibility. Then we have in the next two chapters about where they are to be placed. Some are to the east side, some on the south side, some on the west side, and some on the north side. And around them, closer to the actual, quote, tabernacle, were the sons of whom? Of whom? Levi, right. Now, we went through the names. And very important that we had gone through those names so you have a picture, because when God uses names, we have to find out, oh, is it just happen to be the person's name? Or was this coincidental that this particular name has a very unique meaning, very unique aspect? Or is these people, you will learn later on, are they such great men, brave men, courageous men? But we'll learn later on, many of them died very quickly. Those very same men that are named, because they didn't go in the promised land. All right? So it's not the person. Again, I've said this many, many times. This is not about the people that God's name. It's about what? About what?
The journey. The names of characters.
About what? How God thinks. How God acts, how God produces, His telling us by using certain things and events in the history of mankind, we should be, in our particular point in time in history, fully aware of the reason. But we are still stuck because we are of the earth, and so we think earthly things first. But the Messiah said to Nicodemus, If I tell you and explain to you, and you're supposed to know these earthly things, but you don't understand the earthly things, how can you understand those things are above? For the earthly things explain the above. We say, oh no, that isn't true. We have, it's very interesting, just a change of thought here real quick, because I've got to continue. I'm wandering off, aren't I? It's very important when you start reading, quote, the New Testament, end of quote, especially from the Apostle Paul's writings and what Yeshua said to Nicodemus. Those who are born of the flesh are flesh. Those who are born of the Spirit, they are born of the Spirit, are spirit. And Nicodemus got his answer. He said, okay, now I understand. But in our world, in the 21st century, we think being born again is, I've been like Jesus in my life. I'm saved. But we are still of the flesh. Even John the Baptist said that of himself. He said that I am of the flesh. Yeshua is from above. Now, do you ever think that John, the one who baptized and was the one that led the way, would ever say, I am of the flesh? But he did. You are still of the flesh. I am still of the flesh. We remain of the flesh until the flesh perishes. The flesh perishes. Let's get back here to Numbers. I'm sorry if I raised my hand. I hate doing that. I get too involved. Now, in this word of the two trumpets, there's a verb involved within that sound, or that words has to do with the word trumpet. This particular location, in this particular spot, in the book of Numbers, the 10th chapter. The verb has a very interesting meaning. It has two basic meanings. And, of course, every time, it's like in English, if the word's overused here in this subject matter, use it there. If the word's over here using this subject matter has a different meaning, accept a different meaning. It's the same word. The same thing is in Hebrew. All languages are that way. When it says to perceive, we say that means to understand. No, actually in Hebrew that word means to see. To see. To see. Okay, I got eyes to see. And he says, do you see what I'm talking about. And we use the very same phrase in English, don't we? So it has to do with that subject matter that being talked about. And if we veer off onto a theological or a rabbinic teaching, a philosophy, which just has nothing to do with what's written, then we get lost in tohu vavohu, in confusion and in chaos. And we are in Hoshech. All right? Yes, it has a straightforward meaning of the sound of a trumpet, not a shofar. But also has another interesting meaning behind it. It says to surround. That's an interesting phrase, isn't it? To surround. The other meaning of the word is to separate from the open area. You're going to depart yourself from where you are at, and you're in the open area, and you separate yourself from that open area. When you separate yourself from that which is open area, then you're going to go to a place that is not an open area. Where is that going to be? At the tabernacle. Keep that in mind. So we have these two different meanings, and they were to surround, and what was they had? He had the 12 tribes surround, if I could use that word, the entire tabernacle. Each person, each captain, each head of state had a function, and they were not to move from their location and move to another. Nor was a Levite who was surrounded that temple were not to move from one location to another. They were not to assist the other troops or the other group or the other assembly. Because God builds what? We know that from Hebrews, he says he builds the temple according to his will. And each one of us are fit into the temple according to where he has placed us, not where we would like to be placed. You may like to be placed as a great evangelist. And God puts you sitting down and writing something that is not really that important to your mind. But if that's your function, if that's what, quote, Apostle Paul says, your calling is to do that, do it. As more you do, the greater will be required of you, because then knowledge is increasing to you, as Messiah said to his disciples. Much is expected, or much will be required of you, or much is going to, when you know something and you put it into practice and you fulfill the function, more will be given unto you. Now you say, well, I don't want that burden. How do you say to God, I don't want to work for you? No. Not good news, right? So we come back here to chapter 10. Let's come back to chapter 10, and I want you to kind of pay attention a little bit more about what those silver trumpets are about. God help me, I'll try to get through this section as quick as possible. And the verse 3, I told you this 2 weeks ago, or was it last week? Maybe, I don't remember when. But that when the cloud moved after the tabernacle was built, where did the cloud move to? When it was finished? The whole giant tabernacle or the tabernacle of the testimony? The inner one, the holy of holies, is where it entered into and covered. It didn't cover all the house of Israel. It didn't cover all the tribes surrounding the tent. It didn't cover the Levites around the tent. It covered one place, the testimony. What is a testimony? What? The testimony against us. A witness against us. What was put in the ark? The Ten Commandments, which is a witness against us. And that table, on the table, I mean, and that ark was covered with something. What was it covered with? called, we popularly call the mercy seat. And guess who's sitting on that mercy seat? The devil?
Yeshua.
No. The creator of heaven and earth. Go back. It's a picture of him. The Son of God is to represent the high priest. Did I lose somebody there? He will do what his father has told him what to do. He's not going to go and say, hey, Dad, I'll take over. Get off the seat, Dad. I'm moving in. He said, I do nothing whatsoever without my father telling me what to do, what to say, when to do it, when to say it. He doesn't move on his own philosophy, on his own merit, on his own input or his instinct. He doesn't. He waits upon the Lord, the Father himself, to tell him, now do this. Yes.
Yeshua said, worship him only and serve him only. He didn't say worship me or serve me. He said, worship your Father and serve him
only. Worship him who sent me. He's always aiming at the creator of heaven and earth. His whole subject matter, his whole world was all about the creator of heaven and earth. Let's go on. And remember that the word in Hebrew, which is serious, or in English, some of the English languages, it calls a testimony of the congregation. I've told you what that word is, not congregation. That word is what in Hebrew? The moed. Not referring to time, but a place of appointment. You go to the tabernacle of appointment to find out what your job is, what your function is. That's why they always were around and were sent to the tabernacle of Moed. They're sent there to receive a function, a job. And that's what they did. They went there and received it. And they got their job. Now, you would say, well, they did a lousy job, didn't they? Well, that's our judgment against people. There's where the negativity comes in, and we become greater than the Son of God by judging them. They didn't fulfill God's will. It's real easy to say that, isn't it? It's a piece of cake. To look at them, they didn't perform, therefore they are unfit for the glory of God. Ah. Apostle Paul said in 2 Corinthians that God sent forth in the beginning the light into our Hoshech heart, which is involved with tohu and tofu, chaos, confusion, having no idea what's going on. It's empty. It's worthless. It has no value. Okay? To do what? To show the glory of the Father in us by and through the Son of God. All right? That's the function. So regardless of what you think that they blew it, they were in a world of Hoshech. And in Matthew, talking about the two tribes, remember there was, I think it was, Zebulun and Nathaniel, no, I can't remember which one. Right of hand. But he says, they, when the Messiah came back, after he had gone through 40 days, being tested about three different issues, and this is at a point in time, anyway, make it short, they saw a great light. They were, and it says there, those who were sitting in darkness and in the shadow of death saw a great light. Now we know from John that the Word became Yahshua himself. And so we are to listen to Yahshua. And very important, when he uses certain words and uses certain phrases, which many of you have been here now, and Jeff has taken you back to what is written, either in the prophets or what is written in the Torah. And he says, this is the full story. This is what he said. It was one-liner then because everybody knew what it meant. or have been very familiar with what is written, because they didn't have theological teaching. They didn't have rabbinic teaching. They were having synagogue going and hearing the word of the Lord spoken into them, including not just the five books of, or four books of whatever you want to call it, but also the prophets. They were very familiar with their history. And to us who are not part of that history, it seems, okay, dead unto us. And that's the problem we have as human beings. We don't associate with it. It has no particular purpose or meaning. Now, verse 4 of chapter 10 in the book of Numbers, we see now the words of God. In a sense, you know, we have this red letter Bible in the New Testament. When you ever copy something down on typewriter, maybe you ought to take every time it says the Lord said, and just red letter that stuff. So it stands out quicker. I'm not saying to do that, but I'm saying, I do that because there's certain areas I wanted to flick me right in the face. And I was, oh, what did he say? And this is what he said. If they blow, word is they, not just the high priest, but the high priest and his sons. If they blow the trumpet, then the princes, which were already listed, remember the 12? And for 12 boring days, they gave the same exact boring. I'm extremely using this word so you remember what I said last time. Offerings and the silver plates and the gold things, and they all were identical. So all of the house of Israel, with the exception of Levite, were to do the very same thing repeatedly, one right after another for 12 continuous days. Day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, all the way to 12 days. Which kind of leads you to the 12th day, but we won't go there. This has to do with the second month, by the way, not the first month, second month. Because it says the second month they did this. Oh, the second year. Not the first year, nor the third year, but the second year. Very fascinating when you start realizing, yeah, on the 3 days, day number 1, day number 2, number 3, I know what happened, number 3. Wait a minute. He's talking 3 days. What happened the first day? What happened to the second day? What was going on? What happened on the third day? Now in Genesis, what happened on the first day? God called forth or spoke for the light and said, come. On the second day, what took place? The separation took place. And the third day, what took place? The earth rose up from Hoshet. Life was given to the earth. Have you ever thought about that before? And then the blessings of the earth was on the fourth day. And then on the fifth day, life in the air. And life in the water. That was at one time death. Now that water has life in it. All right? And the earth. Up comes God created from the earth all the breathing mammals that walk upon the face of the earth. And the last thing he brought up was what? And it always says in the field. Very important. You know the difference. He didn't create them somewhere else. He created them in what's called the field. We won't go there today because it's very important to know that Hebrew think thought. So back to Genesis Numbers 10, verse 4. So we have the very first use of this trumpet, of the silver trumpet, is to call forth the heads of the house of Israel. And there are 12 of them. We got that, right? Then he comes forth on verse 6. First of all, rather, then ye blow an alarm. Now, alarm, by the way, does not mean terror, fright, scared, war. It just means an alarm, a message. It's just a message of something for them to do. It's not always a message of hell, fire, and brimstone. It's not a message of, oh, the army come. Because later on he says, by the way, when you blow this trumpet, when you're at war or they attack you, I'm there. That's a different purpose. These silver trumpets are very interesting. We start thinking about these silver trumpets. Now, I know the Bible doesn't seem to talk too much about these silver trumpets. It's listed here. It's listed in 2 Chronicles. But beyond that, we say, what's more important, the shofar? No, not really. What's important is the silver trumpets. And we look at this thing, and we have to say, okay, let's find out what this is all about to the best of our looking at what is written and not try to put into something that is not written. Let's just accept that God uses these two silver trumpets. It's given to the function of the high priest. So we have to look and say, these silver trumpets are in the hands of the Son of God, not in the hands of a person who has a shofar, but in the hands of the living Son of God, our high priest. And he has angels working for him. Do you remember how many elders there were in the throne, around the throne? 24. 24 elders. What do you think they did? Okay, it's your job now, not mine. No, they went to work for the Son of God. Or they will go to work for the Son of God. All right? And there's four living creatures around the throne. They're going to go to work for the Son of God. That's what they do. That's their function. They will carry out whatever the Son of God has, because the Son of God has his scroll that no one knows what's inside of it. Not even the 24 elders. Not even those who are round about the throne. But when he opens up and sees the seal, then John is told, oh, come, I will show you what that first seal is about. Because that first creature around that throne saw the first seal, and it was referring to what his function was to do. And he went and told John, what it's about. We were in wonderment in our 21st century of, huh? So let's go on. Now we know he says here, verse 5, when you blow an alarm or the message, the signal, that certain sound, then the camps that lie on the east shall go forward. Forward to what? Were they going to war? They were heading for the journey into the land of Canaan. They were the first ones to move forward. Not with a bunch of guns, bullets, airplanes, missiles, and bombs, but their family, their everything. Their tent had to be taken up. Their cattle had to be gathered. And it says in the scripture, they came out with many cattle, many sheep, many goats. And you know how easy it is for a man who has a tent, and by the way, his wife has one right next to him, and the children, gathering them all together and picking up your tent and gathering all your sheep and all your goats and your cattle, putting them all together, putting all your belongings together, getting that donkey you got, or two donkeys, loading them up the donkeys. Do you think it took them 15, 16 seconds? No. It took them a lot of time. Yes.
Isn't it strange that the people would be hungering for meat, and they had cattle, and they had sheep.
Okay,
and they
understand something. They weren't really crying out for, I want red meat. They were crying out for what they wanted. What did they want? Fowl. They wanted bird food. They wanted food that like a chicken. They wanted something differently. Okay? Yes, they had all that. They ate an awful lot. When we have the 12 guys doing the sacrifices of these two main things, the whole offering, the shalom offering. And the shalom offering, you'd be able to eat. People are able to eat the shalom offering with the high priest. So they had a lot of physical red meat to eat. But what they didn't have was, oh, no onions. They didn't have any tomatoes. They didn't have any potatoes.
Sauteed mushrooms.
They didn't have any apple. boys. They didn't have any grapes. They did, because they were in the wilderness. They were taken, they took with them corn and barley. Well, they took with them basically the barley. They had a lot of barley with them because they left during that first month, the first harvest. So all this comes through. Because remember, they couldn't make any bread until after the 7 days, then they could make bread. They didn't take any grain with them. They had nothing there to make bread anyway, right? But the manna didn't come until halfway through the trip. And they were bickering and complaining. And God says, okay, here it is. Here's the bread. Here's the manna. And the Son of God says, they all died. We don't pay attention to what the Son of God said. We say, oh, it's a great blessing. God bless them with manna. God bless them with manna. And it's Jesus Christ, the Son of God, the Yeshua himself said, they all died. They didn't live. They all died. Okay. We're talking, okay, something that is physical should teach us something that is above. Right? Yes, God gave them manna, and they do anything they want with it. They can boil it, they can cook it, they can, you know, whatever they want to do it, you know. It's quite an interesting piece of whatever it was. And we think it's some kind of plant. No, it came from above down. It didn't come from the earth up. It came from the top down. All right. What kind of bread should we be partaking of? What kind of, quote, manna should we be partaking of today? What did Yeshua, what was the very first thing that Yeshua was challenged with by the devil? Bread. Bread. And what was the answer? Ah, so you must eat by something else. You remember the woman at the well? And the disciples went out to get him to buy some food for him to eat because he was hungry. And by the time they came back, shocked that he talked to a woman. All by itself, that's funny. But that's funny. Yeah, especially a Samaritan woman. But that's technicality. I'm going to get into the philosophy of hate and crime and all this, anti-women, anti-this. I'm just looking to see what he said to his disciples. He said, I have already eaten. What? There's no evidence anybody brought you anything to eat. He says, my food is the will of my Father. He just got this lady knowing that the Father sent that particular woman to him. She walked away and her group that came and talked to him later. Yeah, he is the Messiah. Because he said to her, I am the Messiah. You know, he never, or very seldom ever says that to anybody. He says, I am the Son of Man. That woman, who was not of the house of Judah, nor was of the house of the northern Galilee, she was the house of Samaria, and she says, of the house of Joseph. The house of Joseph. Amazing. Now, you remember who Joseph is, don't you? Okay. And then he told his apostles, do you know the field is white, ready for the picking? What was the field he was pointing at? The house of Joseph. He sent them to the lost sheep, which was the house of Joseph. But he says, don't go to Samaritans. Why? They've already been told. They already have been told. And they walked away knowing. That's an amazing story when you really look at this. Let's go back to the silver trumpets here now. When you blow it the time, verse 6, you blow it the second time, then the camp that's on the south, what are they going to do? They're going to take their journey. You know, it takes a while for them to pick all the tents up. They weren't to pick up their tent, not to put it aside, not to do anything until that second sound came out. Oh, then it's their job. And then what comes next? Well, it went through each one of the tribes. Each one of the four sides, I should say. So there's four corners. That means all the way around. Well, you know, we use the word four corners. We think of, you know, there's a corner. That's number one. Corner number two. Here's corner number three, and here's corner number four. What's between all those corners? everything else. So when he has you to say, do this, and the four winds, the four corners, the four this, the four that, the four corners of earth. Have you ever noticed that when you, some of you in the modern 21st century, I know you saw this, there's pictures that the satellites come down there and they take a picture of our globe. Do you see any corners? There's nothing there. So it's a statement of, it's like, well, we use the word all 9 yards. Well, it means the whole thing, right? The whole thing. Every lock and stock of anything. When you make a man's suit's being made of the 9 yards. And then, of course, other things are made of 9 yards. I mean, just name it. And we've got 9 yards. 9 yards to this, 9 yards to that. Does it really mean the physical measurement of a yard? But the whole package, it takes all to do the same thing. So nothing is separated from itself. They're all connected into Echad. Let's continue on here. Verse 7. When the congregation is to be gathered together, you shall blow, but you shall not sound an alarm. What? Okay, wait. I got to stop and think about that. What is he talking about? They're not going to war. But he told, by the way, when the east is supposed to hear this particular sound, they're supposed to pack up and start moving. And the south, they hear that alarm for them, not for the people of the east. They pick up their belongings. But here, a certain tribe of Levi has to go in, and with one particular high priest, cover up all those things that are holy. With this cloth, with that cloth, with this covering, this covering, this covering. And they had to carry it out. They were on foot. They couldn't put upon a donkey. They couldn't put upon a cart. Now, that's not the restriction for those of the east. It's not a restriction of those in the south. A restriction to those particular. And the other ones, the other tribe of Levites, they had wagons. They had donkeys. They had, would call it ox, to carry the load, put it upon, and they could carry out the wood and the cloth and all that belongings, part of the external section. But the holy things, the menorah, all the plates, silver bowls, which we were already were given to them by and through the 12 tribes of Israel. Remember the silver plates and the silver bowls, certain numbers gave them a certain amount, and we weighed all out like value. No. It's holy unto God. They had to carry that stuff. Now here, because the east started moving. Now the sound goes to the south. But before the south could go, the south end of the tabernacle had to go inside and the high priest, one of the high priests, the son of the high priest, had to come up and cover all those things that are holy. And then they carried them all out. Then the south moved. Of course, that only took another 15 seconds, right? Okay. Very efficient. But he says, now, verse 7, pay attention to this very interesting thing, because here's another reason. We talked about the first one. I told you for two reasons. It's the calling of the elders and the calling of the journey. Remember, it's the journey. It's not the journey to go to war. It's the journey to go into the land of Canaan. Keep that in mind, because that's what the subject matter has been about. Ever since the first chapter of this point, up to this point, we have all of these things that he has well organized, what he's doing and how he's doing it and why he's doing it. We know why. We should know why all this is taking place. It's to fulfill the promise that he gave to whom? Abraham. And to Isaac. And to Jacob. That's why he's called the God of Abraham and Isaac. He called himself that. That I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay. So now they are to gather themselves together, but not to hear the sound of the alarm to gather to all on a journey. Where are they supposed to gather at? Together. They are to gather together. Find that fascinating. Now, paralleling something here. Now, this is Richard Age's thinking. Just understand, that's my thinking. The first ones who hear the sound is the leadership. The second one who hears the sound is the people to move. But the third one is for them not to move. Did you notice that? They are to do what? Gather themselves where? Around the tabernacle of appointment. Around the tabernacle of Moed. You remember a great angel makes a huge sound? The first is the four corners are called together. Secondly, it's the whole heavens around the earth. That is a fascinating thought. Now, let me ask you a question. Who do you think, when that sound, quote, the last trumpet is blown, end of quote, who's going to rise first? The ones that are dead first. And then, thereafter, comes the second group. At his coming. At his coming. So we have to stop and think, okay, are these silver trumpets just something that has no meaning, no purpose? Why must it be blown on certain occasions, on the time of joy and happiness, on the time of solemn services, at the time of giving the menhah and shalom offering? Why is it blown then? Why don't they just blow a shofar? Because the creator of heaven and earth says, I want you to blow this one. So we kind of put in our mind what is important is the shofar. And God sends and says, this is the sound that I want you to hear. This is the sound. And it comes from silver trumpet. It's going to sound and the world will not. This is Richard Agee's opinion. The world will not hear the sound of the four winds gathering. The world will not hear the sounds because the world hears the sounds of the earth. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, it could be or it could not be. I'm just putting a parallel here with an interesting thing. And on Yom Kippurim, you are to blow the silver trumpets. On the day of Feast of Trumpets, blow the silver trumpets. Because that's what it says. Let's look at it. And every month, here we go. Let's go to verse 11. Verse 10. And he says, now, we talked about other reasons. Now, I'll backtrack here just a little bit. The third sound we talked about was they all gather themselves together. Now another sound comes from those silver trumpets. Verse 9. Now, why are these silver trumpets so important? Means nothing to us because we don't hear them. Right? Here it goes. And ye shall go to war. If you go to war, then you are to blow these silver trumpets. And I will hear it. And I will save you. Now the word still is those trumpets, not the shofar. Go on. And there is verse 10. In a sense, people can break it down. I broke it down to two more reasons for blowing of the trumpet, the shofar. He says, in the day of your gladness. What's the day of your gladness? And your solemn days. Solemn day is what? The most only one in all the holidays is called a solemn feast is Yom Kippurim. The rest are not. It says, hug, dance, be joyful, be happy, come and dance, and eat, come and dance, and eat, That one you're not supposed to eat. Now we've gone through the Day of Atonement, what it really means, biblically, in the 16th chapter of Leviticus, right? Because it is written. So we go by what is written and not by philosophy or belief system. Now, yes, Ellie.
Over the years of watching the cycles of the high days and of the appointed days gives a different feeling of even what's in the future, because he does things on his high days. People who haven't gone through this before are more apt to think that God things will happen on days that aren't anywhere. But this to me is training to pay attention to the days, because that's when he acts.
Pay attention to what is written. All right? Pay attention to what is written, not philosophy, not individual thinking, not individual thought. When I told you that my individual thought, I said my name, and I said this is what I think. You don't have to accept it. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to walk up and said, oh, look what I learned. No, that's what Richard said. Keep that in mind. All right. Let's go on. And see, I can look at your gladness, the fifth reason to blow the silver trumpets. And in your solemn days, sixth reason. And the last one is the beginning of your months. That's an interesting statement. Because there's two different kinds of beginnings. Yes.
So if you have a pair of the silver trumpets, why do we blow the shofar at the new moon ceremony then?
Because I don't have a silver trumpet.
No. If you...
If I had a silver trumpet?
If you have the silver trumpet, which you have a replica of, okay, at the new moon ceremonies, why are we blowing the shofar?
I don't. I have somebody else blow it. Don't I, Jeff? Somebody else got to blow it because I can't blow it with beans. Huh? They're hard to blow. Blow, really hard. Josh can blow it real good. Josh can do a real good job on it. Because they knew they always blew the trumpet. They knew exactly how to blow the stupid thing. Me? Mine's piano. Ding, 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 ding. Let's clarify what it says. Let's clarify. It's the high priest who is to order the blowing of the trumpets, and it's only the high priest's sons that are to do the blowing, not the Levites, not the Gentile, not the Jew, not anybody else of any other tribe cannot take over that job. But we're talking about Melchizedek priesthood here when you relook at it. That priesthood, he will blow it when he knows his father says, now's the time. He will not order it until we read there in Matthew. That's when it's going to happen. Beginning of months. Now, that means every single month? Right. I don't have silver trumpets. I am not a high priest. I am Richard Agee. I don't have authority nor jurisdiction because it's supposed to be, according to verse 8, the sons of Aaron, the priests, shall do the blowing of those two silver trumpets. I can blow a shofar up one side, down the other, but I can't. I'm not good at doing that. Other people blow the shofar. Fine. So we use that. The only thing we got is that. And it's just a symbolism of what we can possibly understand to do every new moon. All right? But it comes to blowing of these silver spoons, the silver trumpets, the sound is so different. It never will ever sound like. And I don't know what the sound should sound like. It doesn't tell us. Make the east move is a different sound than for the south to move. And it's also a different sound to get them all together into one place. It's also a different sound on your gladness. I don't know what it's supposed to sound like at all. All I know this, that if these silver trumpets are to be blown, if there is war, and God will hear and respond. That's all I know. I'm not a man of great wisdom. I just have to sit there and say that's what it says. Yeah. Correct. But we're not of the spirit yet. We're still of the flesh. I mean, if you find yourself a silver trumpet somewhere in the face of the earth, very, very expensive, but I will tell you, it probably got you $4,000 or $5,000, if not $10,000 for a silver trumpet, completely silver. All silver, completely silver. I'm sorry, what? I'm sorry. Yeah, but this is, they use brass. They use brass. I am not familiar. Maybe they did have a cover, probably the outer surface was probably silver coated. Silver coated is an awful lot of things. Okay? Even their coins you got are not completely all silver. It's another alloy with it. All right? Well, I can't answer that question because I don't know exactly what he has in mind for me to do. I just don't know. I just have to wait. But according to what I read there in Matthew, it's the angels who'll do the blowing and not me. I'm not an angel. I'm not a messenger from God. I'm not one that comes from above, come down and blows the silver trumpet. I'm still of the earth. That's my personal thought. But there's something else the Messiah said. Talk to my wife about this. He said, I will cut it short. What's he going to cut short? The moed, the appointment. But he won't count it short until his father says, now count it short. Why? To save the lives of people. When does that occur? I have absolutely zero information. Because even the Messiah said he did not know when that was going to be. If he didn't know when it was going to be, how can I know when it's going to be? He just said, for the elect's sake, it will be cut short. Okay. And there's another phrase that Yeshua talked about. And that had to do with, are there not 12 hours in a day? And you keep on reading, wasn't referring to a physical 24 hours a day. Or 12 hours a day. He was said, do this while there is day. He died before that day was finished. He was talking about himself. I am the day, or I am what it says. I am the light. It will be incomplete. It will not finish its function. He sold that to his apostles. You will do greater works than I. They have to finish the function. If anybody's going to blow the trumpet, it's got to be somebody who's been appointed by God to do so. And I'm Richard Agee here in Santa Rosa, California. I'm not appointed to do anything by that matter. I will never take for granted that I have some fantastic function, because I'm not. I'm just an old man getting older. Yes.
Yeah, my question is for the verse 6 and 7. No, I'm sorry, 5 and 6. It says that the ones in the west will start getting ready to leave. And then he talks about the south, but where is the north and where is the east?
Oh, we have to continue on in the book. Oh. Have to continue on in the chapter. It's there, okay? He just telling you the function and what you do. And later on, you'll keep on reading these chapters. You'll find, okay, the names of these 12 men. They named the 12 men. They repeat it again. These are the north. These are the west, east, rather. These are on the south. These are on the west. And those are on the... It continues on in the chapter, okay? But the most important thing, I think, is very fascinating. Now, let's go there. Verse 11. Oh, I'm so far behind. Okay. No. I got. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to cut it short. There's no way am I going to finish this thing. I mean, Jeff has got to speak sometime today. Oh, continue. Would you come up here? And I need to hear what you said. I got these things for a reason.
I know. I said, rather than cut it short and not give us everything that you have there, could you finish it next week?
Probably. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to... I'm going to probably stop pretty soon. There is a very interesting statement in the 11th verse. Did you notice what that statement was? What day? The 20th day of the second month. Remember I told you that every time there is 3 days, something happens on the first day, and something happens on the second day, and something happens on the third day. It's the same thing with the 3 months. Something happened in the first month, something happens in the second month, and something happens in the third month. In the second month, what was happening? It's about the trumpets. It's about the 12 elders. It's about the Levites. It's about the priesthood. It's about the tabernacle of Moed and the tabernacle of testimony. That's what it's all about. Everything we have read from Exodus to this point tells us something that God is saying, by the way, on the 21st, 22nd day of the second month, in the second year, a cloud was lifted up from the tabernacle of testimony. Now, yes.
Have you been unable to totally see it, and then all at once it was revealed?
Let me write my notes here that I put in parentheses here. Why on the 20th? I have not yet connected with it as of yet. There is a connection that I see sometime before Moses was existed, but I cannot connect it directly. I just find that connection has to do with something in relationship to the orders from the Father himself. On the 20th, this is when you move. Now, actually was, the 20th is when he lifted up. And so all the 20th day, guess what they had to do? Pack up. Tear down. Get their cattle in order. Get their sheep in order. Get their house in order. Get that tent torn down. And make sure it's in a certain specific order. And make sure everything is exactly. How long is it going to take them? 15 more seconds? Yes.
Okay, so my app has the ability to look up the Strong's and possibly do the amplification. It says that Ramses, the pharaoh that evicted them from Egypt, was of the 20th dynasty.
Of the 20th dynasty. Okay, yes.
First day of Passover in the first month was on the 15th. 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. That is the last day before they go across, a repeat of the last day before they went across the Red Sea. So a month ago, they'd have packed up to go across the Red Sea. This time, they're packing up again.
Do you want to know one other thing that's very fascinating about this? Now, look, I have not yet made a complete connection. I don't know if God's going to let me see the connection. I've asked, I've searched, it has to be written. I cannot say, I just believe it's this way. Or there's an assumption it's associated with this, when I haven't seen it written. I've seen the second month written several times throughout the Torah, but every now and then it comes up with a certain date. Now, there's certain dates are associated with the first month. And there are certain dates that are associated with the second month. They're specifically named a certain date. Now, when I looked at this thing, I said, okay, I'll make out myself a calendar so I can understand. But the interesting thing is this. It says that the children of Israel, verse 12, took up their journey out of the wilderness of Sinai, that thorny place, Well, I can make a note to you. Mount Sinai, as we call it. You know, Strong's, you know, the guy got all those things on there. You check out the number. He says it's in Arabia. And all other scholars ignored it and says, no, it's where Constantine's mama said it was. And the whole world centered around Constantine's mama and what she believed. She had nothing to back up any of her facts. She just named them that way because why? Her son was the ruler of all rulers. He could command the world. And what did the world do? Obey. They obeyed mommy's son. I'm kind of cynical on that. I'm sorry if you think I am. But this is the reason why they have the destination and the point where, okay, it was just right up underneath. Because they look at it, they're going north from the middle, somewhere in the middle of the Sinai Peninsula. They didn't go to the right or to the left or the south. They went straight north and ran into a place called Paran. Ah, interesting place. We won't talk about that today because I don't have time. And it says the cloud rested in that place called Paran. And yes, there's been translation that it means a place of a bunch of caves. Now, when you're far north, and the area you see, if it's directly far north, directly from the center, or somewhere near the center of Egypt, go straight north, there's no caves, it's a desert. All right? I have found no definition where Paran means caves. What does Paran mean? It comes from the verb glory, beautiful, adorn. That's what that word comes from. And that's where God stopped. That's where the cloud stopped. Now, pay attention to one more statement. If I see it real quickly. I think it was before that. Because I thought it was very fascinating. I must have missed it. No, it's in the very beginning of the chapter. I'm sorry, it's in the very beginning of the chapter. If read it. I don't remember exactly where it's at. But it had to say that the cloud stopped. It was a 3-day journey from the time they said to pick up on the 20th day of the second month. There was a 3-day journey, and then the cloud stopped. Now, why 3 days? Why didn't they go 7? Why didn't they go 5? Why did they stop on the 3rd day? Now, calculations that I have been able to put together is that 3rd day was a Sabbath, which it makes it the 23rd day of that particular month. When you consider the 20th was the day he rose up and everybody had to pack up and leave. It would take them not 15 seconds. It would take them for the rest of the entire day. They probably left on the 20th. Don't ask me a question. I do believe that. But how far they traveled? It says for 3 days journey. Well, yes, but remember those people were not used to things like cars, roller skates, bicycles, taxi, airplanes. They actually were very healthy people, able to walk for a long period of time because you know what they did in the mode of transportation? Walk. They might have put a donkey there to carry a woman that may be pregnant. Or they may carry in the wagons, the kids are too small. Or maybe someone who was old and couldn't walk that well, is ill or unable to move. But the wagons were mostly used to store their goods, shipping them back and forth, taking them where God wants them to go. Jeff?
But wasn't it an 11-mile journey?
Doesn't say 11. I'm not seeing it. In the Bible, I don't see it written about anything but... I never seen the Bible written at so many miles. It always talks about days. Always talks about days, or always talks about months. I've been there moving, and they're traveling. Yes.
In chapter 9, it says on the 14th day of the second month, they kept the second Passover. So if it took them 3 days to pack up and three days to move.
Where are you at now? Verse what?
Chapter 9, verse 11.
Oh, keep in mind, yes, that was during the time of the second month. Now, we're in the first month, brother. We're in the second month here in chapter 10.
No, it says on the 14th day of the second month.
Yeah, but they didn't take the Passover on the 14th day of the second month. They've taken the Passover.
Right. Now, this is the second one I'm telling you they're taking in the second month.
And chapter, verse 9, right. Chapter 9. Yeah. So, I told you before, this book is not written in chronological order.
I'm just saying I'm in agreement with you.
Right. Okay. I understand now. I understand now. But, no, I'm just saying what I understand. The best I know, I thought Sir Jeff read it. I thought I read it myself, but had it over those 3 day journey. I can't remember what verse that's on right offhand. 20 what?
33.
Oh, way back at 33. Okay, we're not gone there yet. That's the reason why. Okay, 33. Yeah, and they departed from the mount, meaning Mount Sinai, of Mount of Yahuwah, 3 days journey, and the Ark of the Covenant and Yahuwah went before. The 3 days journey, and that was they rested in that place. They didn't rest any place else at that point. They seem to have stayed there in the land of Paran for several days or several weeks. Because we're in the second month. Because they were supposed to go in the promised land, in a sense, on the beginning of the months. Like they really did in the first place, 40 years later. So, when we look at the Word of God, we have to ask ourselves, why did you stop? I always ask God those questions. I'm not challenging Him. I'm just asking Him. So, we'll call it quits at this particular point in time. Because that's kind of an interesting place. By the way, that same place is the place where Ishmael lived. And he was not in the promised land. He was not living in the land of the Canaanites. He was booted out, taken out, and he lived on the other side, east of Jordan, southern east of Jordan River. We go down, and she took a wife for him that was from Egypt. Not from Arabia. But in the Arabian writings, Paran is always in Arabia. It's not any place in the Palestine area. It's not any place north of the Sinai. It's always in Arabia. Now, since they left from Arabia going north, that makes sense. This is my personal thinking.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hillel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hillel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L dot I-N-F-O. Hillel.info.